Hello and welcome to my 7th Complexity Cast. Today's guest for the third time is our good old friend Bill Gesarch.
3 times out of 7. Hooey!
Well, Bill, what can we say? You're one popular guy. So, today Bill is really the host here as this podcast is being recorded live from Bill's dining room.
Courtesy of my neighbor's wireless.
Well, later on we'll use your neighbor's wireless. But for now, let's talk about research.
Research. Okay, want to do some? Or just talk about it?
No, again, not going to do research. The podcast audience will steal all our ideas.
Well, I don't know. If someone plagiarizes my ideas, that means they're good ideas. So is that bad?
One of the most often requested emails that I get is from students who are asking how do they get started doing research? How do you get ideas? How do you approach your problems?
I have the opposite problem. How do you stop? I mean, there are so many bad papers I could write, but how do you filter it? So you're right. So the problem on both ends. How do you start and how do you stop?
So, Bill, shall we start?
We should start.
Or stop.
We should start. Okay, we should start telling them how they can start. Okay, so tell me about your latest paper.
About my latest paper?
What's the latest thing you did? Tell them. How do you get an idea or start your latest project that you started on?
Well, I mean, just various different projects. And they all, you know, every paper has a story, then as I like to say.
Tell us your story.
So, you know, for example, a couple of years ago, Tim Rothgarden came to give a talk in Northwestern, and they were desperate for people to go out for dinner, and I was hungry. So I joined, there were basically 3 people to dinner, me, Tim Rothgarden, and this economist, Kim Souchon, for Northwestern, and then Tim had to run off to catch a plane. So me and Sal.
Strangers for you?
What?
Were the people he didn't know before?
Well, no, Tim I know pretty well.
Yeah, but he was gone.
Reasonably well.
But he was gone.
Right.
How about the rest of them?
So Sal and I were talking. I was talking about complexity. He's talking about the economics he does with law. And then we started a project talking about computational complexity in the legal system.
That must be rather complex. I think I've read that most Supreme Court decisions are like X time complete.
I don't really want to sit here talking about my own research.
Okay, well,
the idea is to talk about research.
Well, question. So what happened though? So you met for dinner.
Oh, had some ideas. Then we started talking when I would come up to visit Northwestern, and you know, we just kept throwing through different models until we finally, hopefully, come up with some neat ideas.
So is this actually is it in progress? Okay, do you have papers yet? Is it gonna have papers? Is a turn award in economics on the horizon? No, not the. Is a Nobel Prize in economics on the horizon?
Unlikely.
Okay. Is a paper on the horizon?
And Kim Souchon, of course, since left Northwestern, he's now in Hong Kong.
Well, however, gee, if only there was some way to contact him long distance, some kind of electronic mail system. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, or Skype.
That works too. Okay. So a dinner led to a paper.
Hopefully.
Is life that serendipitous?
No, I have to say most dinners are paper-free.
Well, is research that serendipitous?
You know, it's. You know, I see research much like trying to find a girlfriend. You know, you have to.
I should remind you, you're a married man, Lance.
Right. But basically, it's, you know, succession after succession of complete miserable failures, followed by the occasional success.
So, much like finding a girlfriend, should you ignore the first N over E candidates and then take the best one after that?
You know what? If you did that, you'd probably stop doing a lot of bad research.
Okay, let's see now. So, Lance, why don't you ask me about my latest foray into research?
No, Bill, let's talk about...
Let's talk about you for a change, okay? Okay, actually, so my latest foray was, again, I think one point here is serendipity, is that you never know what's going to happen, so put yourself out there. What happened recently is a few years ago, I wrote a column on private intro retrieval for Lance's column, actually. Lance's complexity column in, what was it in?
The BEATCS, Bulletin of the European Association for Theoretical Computer Science, now currently run by Jacobo Turan.
Doing a fine job, as were you. Okay, so I volunteered to write for Lance a column on private info retrieval systems. My goal was to actually, I had seen a few talks on it, read papers on private info retrieval, and I wanted an excuse to learn a lot more about it. So I asked Lance, can I do a column? And he said, sure. And I got it to you, I think, actually on time. Wow.
I was surprised at how many people got me their surveys on time.
Okay. Anyway, so the thing is, though, so I wrote the survey, and it seems to be widely cited. I'm not sure it's that well read. It's cited a lot. Also, I have a website of all papers ever written on private info people.
Well, you know what the point is that people are lazy. So in introductions to their papers, you could either describe the motivations of the field or say, for the motivations of the field, say, Bill's paper.
Right. Anyway, so I think the survey and also the website, I think, are quite well cited. Again, read, I don't know, used, I don't know, but cited certainly. However, as such, I was recently in SecureCom.
SecureCom? So, like, SecureCom?
SecureCom?
Isn't that, like, some sort of, like, where people actually do real work? Like real security?
Well, it was weird hearing, the thing is, how is private info retrieval on cycles per second? I don't know what that means, but it was a term tossed around a lot. But anyway, the point is, though, it's in Baltimore, so I was a cheap date. I'm in Maryland. Anyway, so they invited me for a panel at SecureCom to discuss, is private information retrieval practical?
Oh, wait. So what part of no don't they understand?
No, they asked me if I want to do the survey.
Okay.
They asked me after Akush Levitz and Ishai and others who are in Israel and couldn't get over here. And also, I think, Modi Young was in Hong Kong, and I don't know who else was there. Well, anyway, after I was maybe their 10th recruit. But yeah, so I was invited to be on a panel on private info retrieval in SecureCom, even though I don't know any security. I don't care about security, really, on a practical level. And in fact, had I gone to any talks there, I would have been bored. But in fact,
wasn't it boring going to a conference where you don't know anyone?
What's that phrase? A stranger is just a friend you haven't met. So I met new people.
Okay,
that was great.
Okay, name one.
Radu Sayan was the organizer of the panel. And, a guy with a Greek name from Connecticut who does work.
That's okay, I said one.
One, okay, fine. Okay. No, seriously, I met people I didn't know before. That was fine. I mostly had dinner and lunch and breakfast with people from the panel, some of whom were theorists. Oh, yeah. Some of whom were, I think most were sort of theorists. There are more people in the real world than I have. But I went there, I gave a talk on why private info was practical. I had some help from Akush Levitz and Ishai. I'd been in email contact with them earlier. But the important is that because of this talk, I got out there, I actually stumbled upon, I would call it, some new open problems in the area that my grad student's working on now and may have breakthrough. So because of the survey done out of pure interest, I was noted, people noticed that, I was invited to this conference, I got to rub elbows with people, and I got some new ideas of what to work on which I hadn't had before. I didn't go there planning on this, but my point is, get yourself out there. Be driven by curiosity and get out there and get ideas and talk to people. And in fact, Lance, maybe it's bad if all you go to is complexity and Fox and stock. You don't meet the people. You've gone to e-commerce and Colt and Soda, which for you is far out of your area.
No, I've not gone to a Soda conference.
You've been in Soda.
Please do not accuse me of that.
Accuse you? Come on now. I believe some of my best friends have algorithms.
That's true. I like the Soda people.
Okay, so seriously, when you go to e-commerce, do you see people you haven't seen before?
Yeah, of course.
And how's that?
I also see a lot of people I have seen before.
You had said that I mind being a conference I didn't know anybody.
Well, let me give you an example. Last summer I went to this workshop in Bristol, and this
on what?
It was called Complexity and Randomness, and it had you're thinking it's the same old crap, old people, right?
Yeah.
But in fact, half the people were Luca Trevisan or Dener, so the usual crowd. But the other half were these Markov chain mixing people. And, people whose names I know very well.
Did you mix with them?
Yes, I mixed with them. People I know, people's names are Jeremy Sinclair.
Oh, yes. And,
wow, I mean, they'll know his names. But, I don't think I've ever met Mark Jeremy before. And he's, kind of a really cool guy.
Okay.
And, Alistair Sinclair and Leslie Ann Goldberg and people like that who I've talked to maybe once or twice in my life. And, here's a chance to actually, the point is sometimes these people come to Stock and Fox. But Stock and Fox are so big. That you usually end up only talking to people that you know very well. So in these kind of these smaller settings, it was kind of neat to actually talk. Now I have to say, no interesting research ideas came out of this workshop.
But even so, it's still good to get yourself out there. And actually, the SecureCom is only around 60 people, by the way. So therefore, I think it's easier to sort of just mingle and make new friends. So you said there's no one there that I knew. That was true when I went. It was not true when I came back.
I mean, of course, and all friends were new friends at one time.
That's right. There was a time you didn't know me.
Yes, let me tell you the first time I saw Bill.
Go ahead.
So it was the very first complexity conference, back then called Structures and Complexity Theory.
86.
86 in Berkeley, where I was a student. And I walk into this room, and there's these two people talking at light speeds to each other. Bill Gesarch and David Barrington.
Right. And so did you follow, or what did you say back then?
Oh, I didn't follow a word they did, but I was just assumed because they were talking so fast, they're incredibly smart.
Okay, I'm not gonna ask, and what do you think now? I'll just leave it at that. Okay. I'll take on Barrington, though. I talk faster than him. Okay, but the point is curiosity. So Lance, this question. So I worked on PIR just because I was curious about it, and research was an accident afterwards in a certain sense. How about you? Do you read things because you're curious about them, or are you research-driven? Are you technique-driven? Are you curiosity-driven? Are you driven?
Really, it always boils down to me about complexity. I mean, it's somehow I stumbled into the field that I've really grown to love. I mean, this is going to sound silly.
Aww.
So I like to see, but what I like to do is I like to see how can we use complexity in lots of different places. I mean, the same basic just concepts of or economics or biology or physics or whatever. It doesn't really learning. It doesn't. It's the applications. To me, I'm driven by the. Wow, the people have worked in this field, and they don't seem to have cared about computation. So what? And what I don't mean by what's the algorithmic difficulties in solving their problems.
I mean,
how does computation inherently play a role when you have bounded players, restricted players in financial markets, or you have proteins folding or doing some sort of computational process? What is that process?
Okay, so you're curious about large problems, and then you have to essentially cut it down to a research size and actually solve.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, these problems are, of course, intractable. But
yeah. No, that's fine. But the thing is, though, I'm telling the audience here that you can have big ideas, big curiosities, but you still have to get them into a well-defined question.
Yeah, so standard way to do this is just...
define one more class for the zoo.
That's not the idea. Now, the idea is when you want to try to model something, if you try to model it in all its generalities, you won't get anywhere. It'll just be too complex to analyze. And if you can make the model way too simple, then you can probably prove trivial theorems, but they'll be meaningless. And the trick is to come up with a model complex enough that the theorems are interesting and complex enough that at least sort of approximates the real world.
Oh, and simple enough so you actually can do things about it.
I have to say, in most cases, that's not possible. That you end up proving, you end up coming up with a model you can prove theorems about, mm-hmm. but doesn't come close to approximating the real world.
Yeah.
But it's a start.
Yeah, and I've seen that happen, actually, where essentially a field of math or our field is popular because it's too easy to prove theorems about. And people, they just can't stop. And I'm serious about that. So you can start with big ideas. When do you stop doing research? When you yourself, here's one litmus test. If you write a paper that you yourself would turn down, don't do that.
Do any of us ever plan to stop doing research?
No. I know that. But I mean, somehow at some point, especially being full profs as we are, we can afford to say, I can write a bad paper on that. I'm not going to bother.
That's right. And then how do you feel when someone else writes that same paper and gets published?
I wish him well. But again, we can afford that luxury. I can understand a grad student being more annoyed at that. Although, actually, I think most grad students may have the opposite problem. Most grad students that I see, if they can, a result, the criteria for being publishable is it's their result. So there should be some filtering there as well, by the advisor, usually.
Yeah, I mean, that's the role of the advisor. The role of the advisor is to tell a student if they're going off the wrong track or they're doing something that's way too trivial or uninteresting or try to push them in the right direction.
Yeah. So you actually have, so big picture, you care about complexity in area X, and then you'll whittle that model down. I'm more driven by much, much smaller questions. Okay, I have an example of one here. I'm driven by very, very small curiosities. Recently, me and my darling and my sister-in-law and her husband and my other sister-in-law and her husband went to a restaurant together. These are not math books, by the way. And my wife has a master's in computer science, but she's still... My wife knows what I work on, has no idea why I care. My wife tells me, why is a database an n-bit string for private retrieval? May have a point there.
It is not a question my wife would ask.
Okay, but the point is...
My daughter, maybe.
A budding complexity theorist. Okay, or a skeptic. Okay, so I went to the restaurant and I noticed the following. I noticed that it was like, you can't draw pictures on radio, too bad. Okay, I was next to my darling, and across me was my sister-in-law next to her husband, and then across from each other was my other sister-in-law and her husband. The point is, if you have n couples in a restaurant sitting at a rectangular table, and everyone is either across from or next to their darling, then how many ways can n people sit at a table? It's not that hard a problem, but it really obsessed me for a while. Wow, you know, is there a close form? Is it easy to do? And by the end of the week, and asking people about it and doing it myself, I had three different solutions, which, by the way, all were the same. That's comforting. And the thing is, though, just by this dinner, I was inspired for a math problem, which I may put in an exam, or I may put in a high school math Olympiad or something, or I may just, they may have a posting of something. Yeah, there's some math news group that I post occasionally. The point is, though, it was a small thing, but it really drove my curiosity. And don't let it go. If something looks intriguing to you, if you're curious, if you're very, very curious about something, then solve it soon, because a month later you might not care anymore. So there's going to be a window opportunity where you care about a problem. Use that window. Work on them in that window. Now, this, of course, is a small thing. It's also happened with much bigger things. I got the Maryland High School Math Olympiad, and I was looking at all the Olympiads, and there was this problem about subset of 1 to 10 to the 5th of 1 to 1,982 that does not have in it an arithmetic sequence of size 3. But the point is, I read the problem, I read the solution, and then I spent the next 3 years wondering, how big can a 3-free set be? I wrote a survey on it, I had a student do an empirical study of it, and because I was doing all these things, I stumbled, again, the word stumbled across some new results in the field, which I was able to apply to multi-party comm complexity, and I got a paper in MFCS on applying this new Ramsey theory stuff to multi-party complexity. So just because I was curiosity-driven, I got a lot of knowledge out of this, a vast amount of knowledge out of it, and some papers. So again, be driven by curiosity and use that window. Lance, you are driven by smaller questions than what is the complexity of life?
I mean, I really do care about whether SVP is closed under intersection.
Do you care about small, cute problems?
I mean, I love to solve P versus NP.
Okay. As I was saying, that's your small problem, okay?
I mean, where do I get problems? I mean, so what do I do with students? So a student comes up to me and says, I want to do research. What should I do?
Is it open-ended?
Well, that's the problem. But in fact, I mean, does this not happen to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, but that's not like a student comes in and says, I really want to extend Vilgus Archer's work on... Although one student did.
Oh, wow, that's right.
But, no, usually a student comes into my office and says, oh, I'm interested in doing complexity or theoretical computer science or, what is it, this Turing machine anyway? Anyway, they want, what are you going to do with them? So, actually, what I do is something that my advisor did to me, which is...
Did he ignore you?
No.
Hope it go away?
No. I had a great advisor, Mike Sipser, who's now chair of math at MIT.
Oh.
A little plug for him.
Oh, hold on.
Author of that book.
I thought Harry Lewis was a dean at Harvard. Oh, boy.
And I know, and now famous author.
Of a non-math book. Wow, okay, but go on. Okay. So Sipser was a great advisor.
Well, look who's walked in. It's,
Okay. Darling?
Say hi.
Say hi. Okay. Darling, so you still don't think a database is an n-bit string?
I wouldn't call it that.
Well, fair enough.
Okay. That was Carolyn Gisarch.
Okay, so go ahead. So you're saying, what should you do for you that you do for your students?
Okay. So what I do is I give them a proceedings. I mean, it depends what they say they're interested in. If they're interested in general theory, I'll give them a recent Stocker-Fox. If they're interested in complexity, I'll give them recent complexity. If they're interested in learning, I'll give them... the color proceedings.
That's odd. You don't do it well, but you don't do learning theory.
Well, then I push them somewhere else. and then what I say is, look through it. What you should do is go through the proceedings, find papers that interest you. Don't worry about, what paper you can improve on or what paper has the good open questions, those sorts of things. Just focus on a paper that really interests you. So first just read the abstracts and then find the paper and then read it. Mm. And see if it still really interests you and see what happens. So I have to tell you, it actually kind of works strangely for me. So So Mike said, she does this to me. So I read through the papers. And there was this neat paper by Halpern and Moses on knowledge complexity. Mm-hmm. And it got, you know, about Kripke structures. And I thought, oh, this is really cool stuff. So I read the paper. And I went back to Mike's sister, and he said, oh, which paper you choose? I told him, yeah, I read this paper on knowledge complexity. Mm-hmm. And he says, yeah, knowledge complexity. Well, you should really learn about zero knowledge. So he got me, he told me to read the GM, the first one, the GMR paper on zero knowledge. It was before GMW came out. And that's how it got me interested in zero knowledge and objective proofs, which was the first part of my research career.
Will you ever go back to knowledge complexity?
Every now and then I look back at it. It's really, it's more information-based than computation-based.
Yeah. Do you think Sipser wanted to do zero knowledge ahead of time, and whatever you did, if you had said, you know, I really care about Fibonacci heaps, he would say, that's cool, but how about zero knowledge?
I think if I wanted to do circuit complexity, that would have made him happy.
Okay.
Since that was big at the time.
Yeah. Actually, I'm actually much more directed than that. Incidentally, neither style is good or bad, although you've had 4 students out, I've had 5, so there you go.
You can name my students. I can't name yours.
Fair enough. I'm much more directed than Lance is, and my point is that for advisors listening out there, for young advisors, both are fine. I had my 3 grad students come out about a few months ago, and I said, here are 8 topics I care about. Which ones do you care about? And whatever ones they cared about, I then gave them a whole bunch of papers to read on that topic in a directed way. Like one of them is doing the private information retrieval stuff before this thing came along, which is good. I know they're working on other things. But I think that essentially I give them a choice of 8 things. When reading a Fox proceeding is a bit too large, I think. But again, that works for you. I cannot argue success.
Be a little careful here because we're talking about things that worked.
Okay.
I mean, like I said, yeah. How many dinners have you gone to that have not produced math results? How many conferences have you gone to where you've not proven any theorems together? How many times have I come to Marylandville and we've not proven any theorems?
Actually, it's easier to count how many times we have proven theorems. By the way, the math conference, the dinners I go to that I don't get papers out of, I still get out sparkling conversation. And I get out knowledge, which may later on lead to research. You never know.
Or at least makes you a good podcast guest.
We'll leave the audience decide that.
All right. So I think we're about out of time, Bill.
Okay. Very good.
So I hope to have you back again.
Are we also out of space?
No, according to the computer, we can record for another
10,000 years.
24 hours and 15 minutes.
Oh, that all, really?
Remember, in a complex world, it's best to keep it simple.